We spoke yesterday with Paul McGough, the author of Infernal Triangle, the Sydney Morning Herald journalist who's reported for a decade about the conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, the Levant, and the like. He was not optimistic in his assessment as to whether Australian troops can ever achieve their goals in Afghanistan. Someone of a different opinion who's in Australia for the 2011 National Summit, the 9/11 decade, being hosted at the United States Studies Centre at the University of Sydney, is Doug Feith. Doug was Undersecretary of Defence Policy in the Bush administration, and he joins us now. Mr. Feith, thank you so much for your time.
Glad to be with you.
Paul McGough said on this show yesterday that every year around this time early in the summer season, because there are so many different organisations working in Afghanistan, every year you'll get a leader coming out saying, we're going really well at the moment. We're going better now than we were 12 months ago. Our particular goals we're moving towards, but if you look at the overall thrust, the overall conflict, the overall set of achievements, we're going nowhere or backwards. Can we really say we've achieved in the last couple of years and we're on the way to achieving something substantial and long-lasting?
The important question is, you know, what are you measuring? The goal recently has been to build up the Afghan security forces, for example, and they've been built up quite substantially at the local level. There's been a number of areas of progress where local governing authorities are building up institutions. It's a mixed picture, and I think that anybody who comes and gives a totally rosy assessment is overstating it, but it sounds to me like the negative assessment that you said you received yesterday is also an overstatement. And I think that the picture is mixed, but it has important positive elements. And General Petraeus certainly has a lot of credibility. He's not a guy who has the kind of background that would cause a reasonable person to say he doesn't know what he's talking about or he doesn't have any experience in this area. He was enormously successful in Iraq, and he's a very intelligent officer and has a terrific track record. I would tend to rely on his assessment.
In training locals, which is a big part of the Australian role in Afghanistan, are we not just training the next generation of soldiers who will fight for the various warlords and drug lords as soon as we leave? This is a country that has always been run by faction, by warlord, by drug lord. Do we really think we're creating an army that will serve in a functioning Western democracy once we're gone?
I don't think, as a historical matter, that it's accurate to say that it's a country that's always been run by by warlords. There was an extremely severe warlord problem that developed throughout the 90s and then was one of the dominant topics after the coalition forces overthrew the Taliban in December of 2001, all the commentators were talking about the warlord problem. One of the things that's worth noting is through some serious strategic work that the coalition did with the Karzai government, that warlord problem was reduced, practically eliminated. The warlords were pushed successfully to disband their militias. Many of them were then incorporated into the government. And you don't have the kind of warlord problem in Afghanistan that you had for a period of time in the 90s and in the early 2000s.
But whether it's warlords, whether it's tribal differences, whether it's religious differences, have we ever seen Afghanistan functioning as a country in a way that gives us heart that we can impose our ideas of a Western, democratically elected, developing economy model onto this place?
Well, I think if you put it from the point of view of imposing, I don't think it's a wise idea to think that we can impose anything.
Or foster and develop.
Well, I think that the Afghans did show enormous support, courageous support for the idea of electing their own officials. And as you recall, the first elections that occurred in Afghanistan over the last decade were contested, as it were, between the new governmental authorities and the Taliban. And the Taliban was saying that they were going to murder anybody who participated in the electoral process. And they even did some things like stopping vans and pulling people out, and anybody who had a voter registration card, they killed. Despite that kind of intimidation, the Afghans showed up at the polls in extraordinary numbers. So I think the basic idea that people get to elect their own leaders has appeal in Afghanistan, and that has promise for the future.
But on the very topic of elections, a lot of analysts are saying that Hamid Karzai behaved as a crook at the last elections.
Right, the last elections.
And this is our man in Kabul. This is the guy that we are hanging the coat of reviving this place and it becoming a democracy. Most people describe those last elections as an embarrassing farce.
Well, the last elections were, from all reports, embarrassing and not as they should have been.
As people say, seem to be the system of patronage that Mr. Karzai and the various power brokers in Kabul have established, that Western aid seems to be just a drip feed that people skim 20 to 30% off the top of, and they're quite happy for us to be there pumping the aid money through. None of this paints a rosy picture to a lot of observers.
Well, look, again, I don't think that anybody should be giving an unrealistic and overly rosy assessment. On the other hand, it's easy to overstate some of the kinds of problems that that you're mentioning. What we are working on, and this is why I emphasized early on the development of local authorities, there are efforts being made to build up local and regional governments that, and in some cases, they're actually functioning quite well. And there's corruption throughout Afghanistan, but there's more corruption in some areas, less corruption in other areas. The transition from where Afghanistan was to where one hopes it will be someday is not going to be overnight. And if people have no patience and choose to focus on the problems and say these problems mean that Afghanistan is doomed forever to be nothing but a catastrophe, then they're going to give up efforts that in fact have some promise and are strategically valuable. And leaving Afghanistan to become a disaster has security implications for Afghanistan, for worldwide terrorism, for Pakistan, for the security of South Asia, for the security of Southeast Asia.
Doesn't that mean Douglas Feith, former Undersecretary of Defense for Policy in the Bush administration, that we'll effectively be there forever?
Well, when you say we'll be there, I don't think we'll be there in the same capacity forever, but the idea that the Afghans are going to continue to look to the broader world for a certain degree of help with training their forces, maybe working with them on aid projects and the like, that's likely to continue for the foreseeable future. But that doesn't mean that you're going to have ongoing kinds of commitment of the type that you now have with combat forces and the kinds of losses that Australia recently suffered. Mm. It doesn't mean you're going to have that forever.
Without understating the tragedy of every one of those individual 27 losses for Australia and the work that our 1,500 or so troops are doing, what effect would it have on the alliance if Australia was to say, we've decided to leave?
Well, it would not be helpful. I mean, we have seen in a number of cases that allies, after a while, have decided that they want to cut back or altogether eliminate their participation in major enterprises, whether it's in Iraq or in Afghanistan. Life goes on. I don't want to overstate the damage that would be done as a result. On the other hand, there's enormous credit that Australia has gotten and continues to get in Washington and national security circles for the steadfastness of its commitment to the alliance with the United States and its common view of these problems and its demonstration that it believes that it has a major stake in what's going on in Afghanistan. I mean, there are a number of countries around the world that are basically just free riders. They benefit from U.S.-led coalition actions in the war on terrorism, but they don't contribute. Australia is not like that. Australia is not a free rider. Australia is a major contributor, and that's much appreciated.
Thank you so much for your time, Douglas Feith.
Good to talk to you.